the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Sarah McGuinness, for political correspondent of the Irish Daily Mail, is with us. Ben Finnegan, who is the 5 of 5 and 6 of 6 presenter here for the week trending. A story that came up during the week, a political story, Sarah, that a ban on sunbeds is under consideration. I thought we had laws in relation to sunbeds, particularly in relation to not being allowed for use by under 18s.
Well, any regulation that is in place clearly is not strong enough, because this new study that has come out from the Institute of Public Health has found that 5.2% of children aged 10 to 17 have reported using a sunbed, which is really an astounding amount. And, you know, obviously, like most things in terms of public health, when you're exposed to a harmful substance or a harmful product at a young age, you are more likely to feel the terrible effects of it quickly. So this study found that people who use sunbeds for the first time before the age of 35 increase their risk of developing melanoma by 75%. And as you kind of would have touched on there on air, Matt, you know, sun cream isn't really a huge phenomenon in Ireland. People don't realise that even though the sun is not out and beating down on you, the UV is still there, and therefore your skin is absorbing it. And that's probably why Ireland has one of the highest skin cancer rates in the world, because we think, you know, oh, it's not out, therefore I don't have to feel the effects of it. And when we do get it, so many people probably don't put on sun cream because they want to get a nice tan or whatever. Anyway, yeah, Micheál Martin has been very strong on this, and now subsequently the Department of Health, in saying that they are going to explore a commercial ban on sunbeds in the coming months.
Would it be fair to say, Ben, that a sunbed is just actually something that is there to deliberately burn your skin at speed?
That is one way of looking at it, but then there's also the health aspect that can improve, can be used to improve people's lives. Like, I have mild psoriasis. I know that people with severe psoriasis can use the UV rays to help their skin. So people with skin conditions could use it, but that wouldn't come under the commercial use. That'd be a medical use, I suppose. But yeah, like growing up, like I thought everyone knew the dangers of sunbeds, but I'm aware of some people using them, and they kind of describe it like nearly akin to an addiction of going in to get their tan topped up on sunbeds. And I was talking to somebody recently who uses them, and they were just talking about it as if it was like going in for a pint of milk. Oh, you go in, you pay, you go in for 15 minutes and you're done. Away you go.
It is that quick, yeah. You just go in, you're in and out within, like, yeah, as you said, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. A listener says, ah yes, we're great at bringing in laws, but utterly crap at enforcement, all talk, no action. I appreciate that. But even the idea, Sarah, that a working group has been set up to look at the issue, according to the Junior Health Minister, Jennifer Murnane O'Connor, why is there a need for a working group when legislation was previously brought in because all of the information about the damage caused by sunbeds was known? Why is there always this sort of reflex reaction in government to, oh yeah, there's a problem, we set up a working group to have a look at that? Ben, you have a theory on this, do you?
Money. Because it's a commercial practice and people will be out of money for it, and you can't just overnight ban a commercial enterprise.
I actually thought, Sarah, was going to be more that governments like kicking a decision down the road.
Oh, they absolutely do. Like, sure, even if you look at today, there was the Health Committee and Safeguarding Ireland was in, and they were talking about safeguarding adults and whatever. And obviously it's quite different and more very heavy topic. But there's been legislation sitting there since 2017. And the government are saying, like, we need to get a working group in on this to talk about safeguarding for adults. There's legislation that has been sitting there, you know, like, it's crazy. It's across the board, though.
Okay, here's Mike and Tralee. Why should they be banned? Freedom of choice. Parents should be responsible for their children using the sunbeds, not up to the government. What's the next ban? Would it be beer?
No.
You see, it's not just a freedom of choice argument, is it? Because ultimately, if there is a case of cancer, the state will pick up the tab in the treatment, won't it?
Well, the Irish Cancer Society, according to them, sunbed users go, 24% of sunbed users go once a week. It is kind of akin to an addiction, you know? A lot of people get great self-esteem from it. I know when I stick on a layer of fake tan, I feel fantastic about myself. But, you know, it is definitely sort of an addiction thing, an identity thing. And I don't think it's necessarily the same as a social thing.
But I've heard of people who, like, it's kind of a societal or cultural thing now, the fake tan and all that. But somebody who just doesn't like to put on fake tan and instead goes and does the sunbeds. Now, they may be aware of the potential risks of the UV rays and the skin cancer, but they are using that as a substitute for lathering on fake tan.
Okay, this listener wants to know, are UV lamps that you put your hand into for gel nails the same?
I don't think so, no.
I was hoping you'd know that because I have no idea to the answer to that one. Another one say, how do your guests square the need for the production of vitamin D and the lack of vitamin D in children? I don't put sunscreen on our children for 20 minutes until 20 minutes after they go out in the sun.
There's vitamin D supplements in every pharmacy in the country.
Not everyone can afford to buy them.
They are quite cheap though. Lidl, I get some from Lidl, and they're
that gets into another debate. That,
it does, yeah.
You know, the advice to take vitamin D and the price of it.
Something a little bit related from the United States. Robert F. Kennedy, and we're not getting into what he's doing in relation to vaccines, which is quite outrageous, but his campaign to persuade food makers to take out synthetic dyes is something that I think a lot of people would be sympathetic to. Mm-hmm. Tell us about his row with M&Ms.
Well, this is a particular type of dye that is apparently linked to behavioural issues, and he wants to get them banned, and there is, you know, a lot of question marks being raised in the US about their food regulation and should they do more. But it still also kind of raises the question of the whole, the MAGA anti-woke brigade that are you trying to tell us what not to eat?
But he's a MAHA man. Make America healthy again.
Ah, I suppose, yeah. Can you be healthy and great? Is that one of life's great dilemmas?
But hold on, Sarah. Does he not have a point here about putting colourings into food stuff, particularly cheaper food stuffs or stuff that's high in sugar or salt or whatever? I mean, those are things which need to be addressed as well, probably. But, you know, in saying that Robert F. Kennedy is a bit of a nut job, is he not entitled to some credit perhaps for doing stuff that might have benefit?
Well, this was actually done like in Europe. I remember growing up as a child, the Blue Smarties. Does anyone remember when they were removed?
Because were they taken out, were they?
They were taken out because the dye was basically proven to be not unsafe, but they were
transitioning from, as far as I'm aware, they were transitioning from artificial colouring to natural colouring, and they weren't able to get a natural colouring to fit the blue, and they would have had to use artificial colourings.
Yeah.
So, and there was a rumour that went around that they caused cancer, but it was never proven.
But they did remove that because they didn't feel that they could roll it out in a way that was safe and according to their business standards. So they removed it. And I just have such vivid memory as a child when the Blue Smartie came back.
Yeah. There was a huge marketing campaign with the Blue Smartie. But
can you get a blue M&M?
You can, yeah. Yeah. But I really don't think matters like this are as divisive in Ireland or Europe.
Has this been very divisive in the United States?
Well, by the sounds of it, yeah. Like the fact that everything's divisive, though. I mean, in terms of in the current climate of what people can and cannot do and the reasoning and the rationale behind that and the people that they trust to be essentially given a free card for everything, which I'm sure many people who lean a certain way would feel about the Trump administration.
But no matter what the topic is in America at this stage, no matter what you say, there's always going to be somebody who says the complete opposite, given the same value of platform as you.
Okay. Talking about colour of food, I wonder what colour the mushrooms were that Erin Patterson used.
This was absolutely bonkers. Oh, my God.
This is a story from Australia, which has got a lot of attention over the last few months, but came to a conclusion with a guilty verdict at the weekend or Monday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Earlier this week.
So for anyone who doesn't know, Erin Patterson is an Australian woman and she was found guilty of murdering her parents-in-law and her kind of aunt-in-law, I guess, her mother-in-law's sister, and of attempted murder of her kind of uncle-in-law, like her mother-in-law's brother-in-law. So anyway, but basically the kind of story goes that she was, she invited her kind of estranged family members of her estranged husband over for this lunch, and they were all expecting this really bad news, and she served this beef Wellington And at the dinner, she told them that she'd been diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and they left, and it was obviously a very sad meal, they said. And then they fell ill. Her parents-in-law fell ill and passed away. And subsequently then it emerged that there had been death cap mushrooms in the beef Wellington that they ate. And so an Australian court found this week that it was a deliberate attempt of murder, and that it had been premeditated. So she is currently awaiting sentencing at the moment, but obviously very dark. Her young children, who the identities of whom have been protected, were brought in and asked to provide evidence. Like, they were asked questions about when they used to go walking with their mother during COVID, and her fascination with mushrooms in their local park. And yeah, it's just very disturbing, very sad, but really quite an extraordinary case.
I knew there was poisonous mushrooms out there, but I hadn't been aware that there was to the stage that
they could kill you.
Exactly, yeah.
You just saw probably in common with many Irish people that a few wild mushrooms, if taken in a particular way, might make you high.
But that's what I was going to say. Like, I have friends from home who have foraged out for mushrooms, but apparently these death cap mushrooms,
you get them in Ireland. We had an expert on last night talking about it.
You can get them in Ireland now. I don't know if these people who go out and do whatever they want with these mushrooms that they forage at a certain time of the year, but I don't know, are they aware of the risks? Now, the people who do go out, they say that they know what they're looking for and they're only looking for specific types, but look, I'm not experienced enough about it, but I'd be very wary about one of my friends saying that they went foraging at the weekend now.
Okay. Lots of messages coming in from listeners. Apparently, UV nail lamps can cause the same damage as sunbeds, but a lot of the salons now use LED lamps, which have been the recommended switch. There's quite a few. Apparently, the UV lamps can cause cancer. We are recommended to put sun cream on to use them. However, most UV lamps are now becoming outdated and they've been switched to LED lamps instead.
Yeah.
So when you're getting your nails done the next time, Sarah, be sure you find out which one to use.
I will.
Another one says the recommended vitamin D daily dosage is 600 IU. That's the equivalent of 1.5 minutes in the sun. The dosage isn't near high enough in the supplements.
Really? 1.5 minutes in the sun?
But also, can you not be in the sun and still protect your skin and get the benefits of vitamin D?
Is that a stupid
question?
As far as I'm aware, yeah.
Yeah, like, everyone does need vitamin D, but you also need to wear sun cream. Just get a moisturizer with SPF in it, you know?
Like, obviously, you'd need more sun time in the winter compared to the summer to make up for the strength of the sun, I would assume.
Yeah. I think that's a valid theory.
I'm not a pharmacist.
Okay, listener says, I hired a man with a van to move house a few years ago. He said his other job was renting sunbeds, which he installed in your home. He used to set them up inside the houses for communions and children's parties.
Oh, yikes.
Tell us about Elon Musk's Grok AI chatbot and who it's a fan of.
Well, have two guesses. Adolf Hitler. Like, it's kind of so unbelievable, but also, like, you're like, of course this has happened. Basically, Elon Musk's AI chatbot repeatedly praised Adolf Hitler in response to a question about historical figures. So some user asked Grok, who would be best to deal with a post that appeared to celebrate the death at a summer camp in the recent Texas flood. So 100 children passed away, which is obviously a horrendous post. But Grok replied saying, Adolf Hitler, no question. He'd spot the pattern and handle it decisively. And they were discussing, and Grok basically started discussing anti-white hate and at one point said, pass the mustache, because that's how big a fan Grok is of Hitler. But I suppose what's really concerning about this is...
Sorry, has Grok been personally programmed by Elon Musk?
Well, this is the thing. So Grok, a review of Grok came about after what I think it's fair to say right-wing fans of Elon Musk felt that Grok had become too woke. And so Elon Musk launched this review of Grok and they said that they were going to fine tune certain things or whatever. And then lo and behold, this happens. And I just can't think that that is a coincidence. And everything Elon Musk does is so deeply unethical that it would not surprise me if this was the way that things were going in terms of this useless chatbot that people seem to be obsessed with. Mm. But like, it's just, it's all so grim. There was a really good article this week, I think it was in the New York Times, about the effect of like relying on ChatGPT as kind of like a confidant on mental health and the very perturbed things that it was persuading people to do. So I don't like any of it.
Well, there was a really interesting piece by the Journal Investigates this week by Emer Cawley about Meta's AI and an Irish outsourced company who are employing people to give AI inputs and try to teach the AI how to react to things. And she'd reported that these people, these moderators who were paid modest sums, were being told to, or part of their job was to input self-harm prompts and also make, or to think like a paedophile was
what?
Line in the piece, yeah. That they had to do like 150 prompts a day, and they reported to her that it was having a serious psychological effect on them. So that's the other side of Grok putting out this. There's somebody putting it in.
Yeah.
Well, somebody here says Grok just uses available data and trends on Twitter, so it's hardly surprising that his views are so abhorrent since Musk has taken the moderation breaks off Twitter. And this is, seems to be where the people who have appalling points of view are those that they go and they post it on Twitter, and then it just continuously feeds the loop, perhaps.
Mm. It is quite funny, though, when somebody does tweet something random and there's always, like, under a big tweet, there's always somebody, at Grok, what's this about?
Yeah.
And there's just this really loose, vague explanation for what the tweet is about. And I don't, I've never used it, but I don't think I'd have much interest in using it now.
Well, it's really like the pinnacle of what Twitter has become about, which is just boredom and negativity and people spewing hate. Like, it's genuinely just bonkers, but everything is viewed through this lens of me, of Elon Musk and his, like, there was another example of whereby the Texas floods, someone asked Grok what that was about, and he blamed, and Grok blamed deficiencies within the government structures to, and kind of pointed at Donald Trump's structures to detect floods. So it is so unbelievably biased, and people without anything better to do are playing into it, let alone, like, you know, there is no critical thinking gone into it at all, even let alone like the amount of water we know AI takes up, the environmental impact of AI. It's just true brain rot at its best.
There are people who are there's a lot of good for AI, but there are people who are using it as a crutch for their life. And I know of people who ask ChatGPT, what's today's weather going to be like?
People are using it as Google.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's mental.
And of course, do they have any idea the amount of power that's required
exactly.
to do that?
No.
They probably don't. And do you know what? They probably don't care.
No.
Like asking ChatGPT, what's the weather like in Dublin today? Like, just go on Met, Aaron. It's way more reliable.
And not as lazy. Okay.
Or look out the window.
We're starting to plan our appearance at the Electric Picnic at the end of August here on The Last Word. But I believe the Electoral Commission is also planning to be there.
How do Electric Picnic?
We've been at Electric Picnic loads of times.
I didn't know we're going down. That'd be great, though. Well,
Matt and Fatboy Slim, eh?
So Ed Sheeran was a guest on The Last Word once at the Electric Picnic.
Was he?
Yes.
That's class.
There you are. He played two songs for us as well.
Well, you can have Art O'Leary on with you now this year.
Not sure he's going to be. Anyway.
So the Electoral Commission are going to Electric Picnic. They're going to have a stand there, and they're going to run mock ballots to try and show people, young people in particular, how to vote in elections, because the presidential election is coming up later in the year.
They might have been better off at Longitude, wouldn't they?
No.
Well, no, maybe all the young people there are.
They can't even vote. Most of them are.
Yeah, but you've got to get them interested before they can vote.
Oh, yeah, true.
And the Electric Picnic has all sorts of age groups at it.
Well, like,
they'll even allow old fellas like me to turn up at it.
Ah, no. But they, I don't think it's just like 18-year-olds who aren't voting. Like, it's right up. So 18 to 34-year-olds surveyed are the biggest cohort of eligible voters who weren't registered to vote and therefore did not vote in the general election.
Like, I have friends who registered for the first time for the general election last year. And they're in their 30s. So like, they are right to try and target people. But it's one thing about registering them and making sure that they register. It's another thing educating them on who to vote for or what they should do in a ballot box. So it is kind of good to give kind of a mock presentation of what voting is like, because you can have the perception of yes, no being the vote. But in Ireland, you know, we have the PRS TV, so it can be quite complicated. So, like, I'm getting flashbacks, PTSD back to November, the amount of explanations I had to do about how to vote in an election, and no doubt I'll have to do them again come October, November.
When it comes to the presidential election. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, are you trying to bring down the government, Sarah McGuinness, with your story in the Irish Daily Mail this year, or this week, about Taoiseach Micheál Martin managing to get back from Japan in time for Cork's glorious victory over Dublin in the All-Ireland Senior Hurling semi-final last Saturday evening?
I never have an agenda, so I take offence. But anyway, basically what happened was the Taoiseach was on a trade mission last week in the beautiful Japan. And usually what happens is journalists are kind of told, here's when he's flying. And particularly TV crews like to be with them just in case anything happens so they can step off the plane and they can, you know, kind of get their clip. And brilliant. There we go. Over there, they learned that he had, in fact, changed his flights. And they weren't told why and they weren't told when, because they had been told a month in advance when his flights were. He was meant to be flying through Dubai. And all of a sudden, it was just kind of like, oh, no, we're actually leaving earlier. And there was kind of a joke like, oh, is it so he's back in time for the match? And there was kind of a no comment. But anyway, that, like, it was all kind of in jest. But so this question was put.
And he did get to the match. But maybe that was just a happy coincidence.
But the reason that was identified by the Department of the Taoiseach for him getting home, which is fair enough, was the fact that there is obviously a lot of turbulence in the Middle East, and there had been the strike on Qatar a week before, lots of uncertainty, and that he might be subject to delays should he fly through Dubai.
Did he go out via Qatar?
No, he was meant to fly from Osaka to Dubai, Dubai to Dublin.
Oh, on the way back.
But instead, he flew the opposite way. He flew to Toronto and from Toronto to Dublin. So he actually spent more time in the air, but
got home earlier.
But got home earlier because he would have crossed the international dateline. So anyway, the question was posed, was this related to the match? And there was a firm no. It was to do with the conflict in the Middle East. But Piers Doherty raised the matter at a Oireachtas committee meeting. And I suppose the thing about this is flights are obviously very expensive, particularly when it's six government officials, some of whom will be flying business class, and whether flights were changed at the last minute for whatever reason. So no additional cost has been cited at the moment. It could be up to €64,000, the cost of this, if all of them flew business class. I doubt all of them did fly business class, but anyway.
What do you make of this, Ben?
Well, the Taoiseach said in the committee meeting that it had nothing to do with the hurling match, and he would have been back in time for the hurling match if he had even flown through Dubai.
He would have been back at between 12 and 1, but instead he was back between 8 and 9. But
he would have had far worse jet lag coming back that way rather than going to the other way.
He would have, but also he would have had a lower risk of cancellation. And also there is the fact that, sorry, I'm not trying to, like, you know, shoot down my own story. I'm trying to be genuinely unbiased here.
I know, yeah.
There is the fact that, you know, like, he is the Taoiseach of the country and he can't be trapped, like, somewhere in the Middle East for a day, really. You know, like, that is not a good security situation. But there is also the fact that, and this has been said to his face, that he does have the reputation for being slightly tetchy when asked a question that he does not want to be asked. So that was formed quite a lot of the committee. I believe I was, my story was called Nonsense and Nonsense, so I'm delighted.
Very briefly, Ben, just to finish off, will we ever see Greg Wallace on television again of MasterChef?
Probably not on entertainment, but maybe on news.
Very clever answer on that. Just explain what's happened there again. All the allegations have been investigated. But
he has come out now saying that he's tried to kind of say that autism is the reason.
You know, that's really offensive, I think, to many people who are autistic.
That I think so too.
Yeah.
And, like, his friends are putting out stories that he can't wear underwear because of his autism diagnosis. And he's even in the past said, like, his son has autism. And he's made weird comments about his son in the past. So I don't know what his game plan here is with the whole I'm taking his bona fides that he does have autism, if he's saying he has autism, but using it as a crutch for his behaviour, I don't think is acceptable.
Let's leave it there. Ben Finnegan and Sarah McGuinness from the Irish Daily Mail, thank you very much for being with us.
The Last Word.
With Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.